We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
Okay, let's unpack this. We have a really fascinating piece of source material today. It's a narrative, the story of the Great Pet Parade prank. And honestly, it offers the surprising blueprint for understanding like ethical creativity and accountability, but it's all wrapped up in a package of pure silliness, which is great.
Exactly.
We're diving into the community of Wigglewood and their big event, the annual Pet Parade. Picture this. Every kind of pet you can imagine, fluffy, scaly, whatever, marching down the street. And they're all in these like meticulously planned custom costumes. It's peak local pride.
Oh yeah, peak organization.
But our mission today really is to move beyond just the fluff and the feathers. We need to find those specific nuggets of wisdom hidden in all the chaos. We're using the actions of the town's resident mischief architects, the twins, Max and Molly, as our guide. It's all about exploring that crucial line between creative fun and, you know, actual consequences.
And what's immediately clear of this narrative is that it's structured almost like a classic case study. It's about unintended consequences, right? We're not just summarizing a fun story for you. We're really synthesizing the specifics of the mayhem, the who, the what, and crucially, when the fun kind of stopped being fun. The goal is to extract some concrete lessons on safety, humor, and maybe most importantly, redemption.
Okay, so let's start with the architects themselves, Max and Molly. Now, the source says they weren't trying to sabotage the town or anything malicious. They just felt the parade needed to be livened up. That's the phrase used, which sounds like, you know, just undirected creative energy looking for an outlet.
Exactly. They saw an opportunity for surprise, for spectacle. Their motivation, it seems, was to replace predictability with something memorable. So they acted the night before, pulling off this big costume switcheroo. They fundamentally altered the expected reality of the parade.
And that's the core of the prank, isn't it? They didn't break anything, they just changed the context. And here's where it gets really interesting. The specific swaps. They engineered maximum visual confusion, but also like maximum delight at first anyway. This wasn't just random shuffling. It feels like it was kind of targeted chaos.
Oh, absolutely targeted.
I mean, we're talking about a small, normally timid cat suddenly appearing dressed as a fearsome fire-breathing dragon or the absolute opposite. A slow, you know, stately turtle suddenly decked out in a frilly ballerina outfit.
It's the incongruity, right?
Totally. The sheer visual clash sparked that initial wave of laughter all through Wigglewood.
Mm-hmm. And the detail that really shows their, let's say, commitment to the bit is Mr. Featherbeak the parrot.
Mm-hmm.
Dressed as a pirate. Oh, okay. Funny enough. But then they actually put a tiny squawking parrot plush on his shoulder.
That's brilliant.
It's meta humor. It shows like this amazing conceptual execution, but also maybe zero foresight about where this could actually lead.
Yeah, zero risk assessment. And even the local bigwigs weren't immune. The mayor's fancy goldfish, usually just swimming in its bowl, gets wheeled out wearing miniature sunglasses and a tiny snorkel. And the crowd's initial reaction is key here. Confusion turns almost instantly into just genuine town-wide giggling. So the prank was, initially at least, a massive hit.
Huge success. But if we look closely, that first wave of collective laughter, it hits a wall pretty quickly. And this brings up that important ethical question, doesn't it? At what exact moment did their, quote, innocent fun cross the line into actual trouble? The story really pivots when the complexity, the sheer absurdity of the costumes, leads to a real safety risk.
Right, the turning point. The source is very specific. It's the loss of Snickers the ferret. Now, Snickers was wearing, get this, a highly restrictive banana costume, somehow also aerodynamic. And what was he chasing? He was chasing a runaway banana costume down the street.
Which is just, wow. What's fascinating there is the costume itself became the trigger for the danger. That bright, distinct banana disguise, it meant when the poor ferret panicked and ran off into the crowded market area, it was basically indistinguishable from, I don't know, other banana-themed stuff, maybe vendor props. The source suggests he might have been chasing his reflection or a similar prop.
So the fun just stopped, flat out.
Yeah, because the boundary of safety was breached. They didn't intend harm, clearly. But the consequence was really you've got a lost pet, a frantic owner. It's not funny anymore.
And this, for me, is the moment where Max and Molly show real accountability. This is maybe the most critical learning point in the whole story. They realized their prank had gone, as the text says, a bit too far. But instead of running or hiding, which kids might do, they immediately jumped into action. Remediation.
Yes. They recognized that their creative energy, the same energy that started the chaos, now had to be channeled into fixing it, into organized recovery. And this wasn't just, you know, saying sorry. It was actual leadership under pressure.
What they did was organize this highly specific search effort. And they used the parade's own energy to do it. They led a goofy conga line of parade goers. Think about that for a sec. They took this disorganized mob of confused people and pets and gave them a specific, unified mission, but still kind of humorous, right? A conga line search party.
It's organized absurdity for crisis management.
Exactly.
That rescue conga line, I mean, that's just a perfect little microcosm, isn't it? Channeling disruptive energy into organized recovery, it proves the same imagination that caused the problem can absolutely be used to solve it.
And it worked. Snickers is eventually found safe and sound, still wearing his banana disguise, hiding in a popcorn stand of all places.
Thank goodness. Crisis averted.
So if we connect that action, the immediate apology, the organized rescue to the bigger picture, the story gives us pretty clear guidance on applying creative energy ethically. They didn't wait for the mayor or some authority figure to step in. They took ownership immediately.
And the town's reaction, which comes next, is really the profound analytical payoff here. They don't punish the creativity. They actually reward the responsibility. They reward the initiative the twins showed during the crisis. The town effectively separates the prank itself, the idea, from the accountability shown afterwards, the action.
Okay, I hear you. But honestly, doesn't crowning them Grand Marshals of Mayhem kind of encourage future chaos? Like, does the town really learn anything? Or are they just sort of validating disruption? Why title them for mayhem specifically? Why not, I don't know, Grand Marshals of Restoration or something?
That's a fair question, but I think that's the core distinction, maybe. They weren't just rewarded for the initial prank idea. They were rewarded for the full cycle. It was creative leadership, from spark to solution. The title, yeah, Grand Marshals of Mayhem, it honors that initial spark, the disruption. But the trophy and the whole context honor the redemption. The trophy they get is shaped like a laughing llama.
A laughing llama, seriously.
Yep. That juxtaposition, the formal-sounding title, the completely absurd reward, it reinforces the idea that real fun, lasting fun, requires understanding limits. The reward isn't like official power or money. It's social recognition. It signals their standing within the community is restored, maybe even enhanced.
Okay, so the award validates the creative spirit, but only if it's paired with self-correction. I get that. So what does all this mean for us, for people trying to pull actionable knowledge out of this story? I mean, this narrative is actually a surprisingly robust template for ethical leadership, isn't it? Let's maybe distill those core educational takeaways.
Right. First, I think we have to acknowledge the source material's powerful point about the importance of humor and creativity. Max and Molly didn't intend malice. They wanted joy. That desire to liven things up is actually pretty essential. It's essential for innovation, for community spirit. It's what breaks up complacency, you know?
Sure, yeah. Okay, second takeaway, the need to set a clear boundary. Pranks are fun only when they are safe and respectful. The moment safety was compromised, when Snickers got lost, when the consequence became tangible, that's the ethical violation. That whole banana costume incident serves as a very physical, very memorable marker for where that line got crossed.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the most crucial lesson, especially for anyone in a leadership role or anyone trying new things, the absolute necessity of taking responsibility when a joke or an idea or maybe an experiment goes too far or just goes wrong. Max and Molly's actions organizing that conga line showed that ownership isn't just about saying sorry. It's about actively mobilizing resources to fix the problem you caused. That proactive response, that's the real foundation of accountability.
And the final core lesson the narrative leaves us with, it's so explicit it just sticks with you. It's great to be silly, but always make sure your fun doesn't confuse or lose a ferret. It connects these high-level concepts, creativity, kindness, organized action, by saying they go hand in paw.
I love that phrase.
It's good, right? They're not separate things. They have to coexist if you want to be crowned a marshal of, well, anything, really.
Yeah. The town of Wigglewood essentially codified this system where disruption is tolerated, maybe even celebrated, provided the disruptor acts as the first responder when things inevitably go sideways sometimes. That's a really fascinating sociological dynamic when you think about it.
So we started this deep dive with this wonderfully silly pet parade in Wigglewood, and we ended up with surprisingly clear, targeted guide on creative ethics and like community crisis management, all anchored by a lost parrot in a banana suit and a laughing llama trophy. You couldn't make it up. The source material really shows us that the biggest rewards often come not just from starting the chaos, but from controlling it and cleaning it up fast.
Absolutely. The twins learned that creativity shines brightest when it actually brings everyone together. First, okay, for laughter, but then critically for collective action, that unexpected rescue conga line. We've established the balance needed. Disruptive innovation seems to require a pretty robust plan for self-correction. So considering this story, the final thought maybe is this. The next time you, personally, use your creativity to liven things up, how do you build in that necessary safety net? How do you pre-plan the response, just in case, to ensure no one ends up metaphorically chasing a runaway banana costume? That readiness for accountability, maybe that's the real challenge of creative leadership today.